How did the father of Millicent receive this second part?
With mixed feelings. Unsmiling, he heard and saw with wonder a Jew's daughter all dressed in green.
Condense Stephen's commentary.
One of all, the least of all, is the victim predestined. Once by inadvertence, twice by design, he challenges his destiny. It comes when he is abandoned and challenges him reluctant and, as an apparition of hope and youth, holds him unresisting. It leads him to a strange habitation, to a secret infidel apartment, and there implacable immolates him, consenting.
Why was the host, victim predestined, sad?
He wished that a tale of a deed should be told, of a deed not by him, should by him not be told.
Why was the host, reluctant, unresisting, still?
In accordance with the law of the conservation of energy.
Why was the host, secret infidel, silent?
He weighed the possible evidences for and against ritual murder. The incitation of the hierarchy, the superstition of the populace, the propagation of rumour in continued fraction of veridicity, the envy of opulence, the influence of retaliation, the sporadic reappearance of atavistic delinquency, the mitigating circumstances of fanaticism, hypnotic suggestion and somnambulism.
From which, if any, of these mental or physical disorders was he not totally immune?
From hypnotic suggestion. Once, waking, he had not recognised his sleeping apartment. More than once, waking, he had been for an indefinite time incapable of moving or uttering sounds. From somnambulism, once sleeping, his body had risen, crouched and crawled in the direction of a heatless fire, and having attained its destination there, curled, unheated, in night attire, had lain sleeping.
Had this latter, or any cognate phenomenon, declared itself in any member of his family?
Twice, in Holler Street and in Ontario Terrace. His daughter Millicent Millie, at the ages of 6 and 8 years, had uttered in sleep an exclamation of terror and had replied to the interrogations of two figures in night attire with a vacant, mute expression.
What other infantile memories had he of her?
15th June 1889, a querulous newborn female infant crying to cause and lessen congestion. A child renamed Padney Socks. She shook with shocks her money box. Counted his 3 free money penny buttons, 1 through 3. A doll, a boy, a sailor she cast away. Blonde, born of 2 dark. She had blonde ancestry, remote. A violation. Herr Hauptmann Haino, Austrian Army. Proximate. A hallucination, Lieutenant Mulvey, British Navy.
What endemic characteristics were present?
Conversely, the nasal and frontal formation was derived in a direct line of lineage which, though interrupted, would continue at distant intervals to its most distant intervals.
What memories had he of her adolescence?
She relegated her hoop and skipping rope to a recess. On the Duke's lawn, entreated by an English visitor, she declined to permit him to make and take away her photographic image. Objection not stated. On the South Circular Road, in the company of Elsa Potter, followed by an individual of sinister aspect, she went halfway down Stamer Street and turned abruptly back. Reason of change not stated. On the vigil of the 15th anniversary of her birth, she wrote a letter from Mullingar, County Westmeath, making a brief allusion to a local student, faculty and year not stated.
Did that first division, portending a second division, afflict him?
Less than he had imagined, more than he had hoped.
What second departure was contemporaneously perceived by him similarly, if differently?
A temporary departure of his cat.
Why similarly? Why differently?
Similarly, because actuated by a secret purpose, the quest of a new male, Mullingar student, or of a healing herb, valerian. Differently because of different possible returns to the inhabitants or to the habitation.
In other respects were their differences similar?
In passivity, in economy, in the instinct of tradition, in unexpectedness.
As?
In as much as, leaning, she sustained her blonde hair for him to ribbon it for her. Cf. neck-arching cat. Moreover, on the free surface of the lake in Stephen's Green, amid inverted reflections of trees, her uncommented spit, describing concentric circles of waterings, indicated by the constancy of its permanence, the locus of a somnolent prostrate fish. Cf. mouse-watching cat. Again, in order to remember the date, combatants, issue and consequence of a famous military engagement, she pulled a plait of her hair. Cf. ear-washing cat. Furthermore, silly Millie, she dreamed of having had an unspoken, unremembered conversation with a horse whose name had been Joseph, to whom, which, she had offered a tumblerful of lemonade, which it, he, had appeared to have accepted. Cf. Hearth Dreaming Cat. Hence, in passivity, in economy, in the instinct of tradition, in unexpectedness, their differences were similar.
In what way had he utilized gifts? One, an owl, two, a clock, given as matrimonial auguries to interest and to instruct her?
As object lessons to explain. One, the nature and habits of oviparous animals, the possibility of aerial flight, certain abnormalities of vision, the secular process of embalsamation. Two, the principle of the pendulum, exemplified in bob, wheel gear and regulator, the translation in terms of human or social regulation of the various positions clockwise of movable indicators on an unmoving dial, the exactitude of the recurrence per hour of an instant in each hour when the longer and the shorter indicator were at the same angle of inclination. Videlicet, 5 5/11 minutes past each hour per hour in arithmetical progression.
In what manners did she reciprocate?
She remembered. On the 27th anniversary of his birth, she presented to him a breakfast moustache cup of imitation Crown Derby porcelain ware. She provided, at quarter day or thereabouts, if or when purchases had been made by him, not for her, she showed herself attentive to his necessities, anticipating his desires. She admired, a natural phenomenon having been explained by him, not for her, she expressed the immediate desire to possess, without gradual acquisition, a fraction of his science, the moiety, the quarter, a thousandth part.
What proposal did Bloom, diambulist, father of Millie, sonambulist, make to Stephen, noctambulist?
To pass in repose the hours intervening between Thursday proper and Friday normal on an extemporized cubicle in the apartment immediately above the kitchen and immediately adjacent to the sleeping apartment of his host and hostess.
What various advantages, warder, might have resulted from a prolongation of such extemporization?
For the guest, security of domicile and seclusion of study. For the host, rejuvenation of intelligence, vicarious satisfaction. For the hostess, disintegration of obsession, acquisition of correct Italian pronunciation.
Why might these several provisional contingencies between a guest and a hostess not necessarily preclude or be precluded by a permanent eventuality of reconciliatory union between a schoolfellow and a Jew's daughter?
Because the way to daughter led through mother, and the way to mother through daughter.
To what inconsequent polysyllabic question of his host did the guest return a monosyllabic negative answer?
If he had known the late Mrs. Emily Sinico, accidentally killed at Sydney Parade Railway Station, 14th October 1903.
What inchoate corollary statement was consequently suppressed by the host?
A statement explanatory of his absence on the occasion of the interment of Mrs. Mary Dedalus, born Goulding, 26th June 1903, vigil of the anniversary of the decease of Rudolf Bloom, born Virag.
Was the proposal of asylum accepted?
Promptly, inexplicably, with amicability, gratefully it was declined.
What exchange of money took place between host and guest?
The former returned to the latter, without interest, a sum of money, £1.7, advanced by the latter to the former.
What counter-proposals were alternately advanced, accepted, modified, declined, restated in other terms, re-accepted, ratified, reconfirmed?
To inaugurate a pre-arranged course of Italian instruction, place, the residence of the instructed. To inaugurate a course of vocal instruction, place, the residence of the instructress. To inaugurate a series of static, semi-static and peripatetic intellectual dialogues, places, the residence of both speakers, if both speakers were resident in the same place. The Ship Hotel and Tavern, 6 Lower Abbey Street, W&D Connery Proprietors, the National Library of Ireland, 10 Kildare Street, the National Maternity Hospital, 29, 30 and 31 Holler Street, a public garden, the vicinity of a place of worship, a conjunction of two or more public thoroughfares, the point of bisection of a right line drawn between their residences, if both speakers were resident in different places.
What rendered problematic for Bloom the realization of these mutually self-excluding propositions?
The irreparability of the past. Once, at a performance of Albert Hengler's circus in the Rotunda, Rutland Square, Dublin, an intuitive party-coloured clown in quest of paternity had penetrated from the ring to a place in the auditorium where Bloom, solitary, was seated, and had publicly declared to an exhilarated audience that he, Bloom, was his, the clown's, papa. The imprevidibility of the future. Once, in the summer of 1898, he, Bloom, had marked a florin, 2 shillings, with 3 notches on the milled edge, and tendered it in payment of an account due to and received by J&T Davy Family Grocers, 1 Charlemont Mall, Grand Canal, for circulation on the waters of civic finance, for possible circuitous or direct return.
Was the clown Bloom's son?
No.
Had Bloom's coin returned?
Never.
Why would a recurrent frustration the more depress him?
Because at the critical turning point of human existence, he desired to amend many social conditions, the product of inequality and avarice and international animosity.
He believed then that human life was infinitely perfectible, eliminating these conditions.
There remained the generic conditions imposed by natural, as distinct from human law, as integral parts of the human whole. The necessity of destruction to procure alimentary sustenance, the painful character of the ultimate functions of separate existence, the agonies of birth and death, the monotonous menstruation of simian and particularly human females, extending from the age of puberty to the menopause, inevitable accidents at sea, in mines and factories, certain very painful maladies and their resultant surgical operations, innate lunacy and congenital criminality, decimating epidemics, catastrophic cataclysms which make terror the basis of human mentality. Seismic upheavals, the epicentres of which are located in densely populated regions. The fact of vital growth, through convulsions of metamorphosis, from infancy through maturity to decay.
Why did he desist from speculation?
Because it was a task for a superior intelligence to substitute other, more acceptable phenomena in place of the less acceptable phenomena to be removed.
Did Stephen participate in his dejection?
He affirmed his significance as a conscious, rational animal proceeding syllogistically from the known to the unknown, and a conscious, rational reagent between a micro and a macrocosm, ineluctably constructed upon the incertitude of the void.
Was this affirmation apprehended by Bloom?
Not verbally, substantially.
What comforted his misapprehension?
That, as a competent keyless citizen, he had proceeded energetically from the unknown to the known through the incertitude of the void.
In what order of precedence, with what attendant ceremony, was the exodus from the house of bondage to the wilderness of inhabitation effected?
Lighted candle in stick borne by Bloom, diaconal hat on ashplant borne by Stephen.
With what intonation, secreto, of what commemorative psalm?
The 113th, Modus Peregrinus, in exitu Israel de Egypto, Domus Jacob de Populo Barbaro.
What did each do at the door of egress?
Bloom set the candlestick on the floor. Stephen put the hat on his head.
For what creature was the door of egress a door of ingress?
For a cat.
What spectacle confronted them when they, first the host, then the guest, emerged silently, doubly dark, from obscurity by a passage from the rear of the house into the penumbra of the garden?
The heaven tree of stars hung with humid night-blue fruit.
With what meditations did Bloom accompany his demonstration to his companion of various constellations?
Meditations of evolution increasingly vaster. Of the moon, invisible in incipient lunation, approaching perigee. Of the infinite, latiginous, scintillating, uncondensed Milky Way, discernible by daylight by an observer, placed at the lower end of a cylindrical vertical shaft, 5,000 feet deep, sunk from the surface towards the center of the earth. Of Sirius, Alpha in Canis Major, 10 light-years, 57 million miles distant, and in volume 900 times the dimension of our planet. Of Arcturus, of the precession of equinoxes, of Orion with belt and sextuple, sun, theta and nebula, in which 100 of our solar systems could be contained. Of moribund and of nascent new stars, such as Nova in 1901. Of our system plunging towards the constellation of Hercules, of the parallax or parallactic drift of so-called fixed stars, in reality ever moving from immeasurably remote aeons to infinitely remote futures, in comparison with which the years 60 and 10 of allotted human life formed a parenthesis of infinitesimal brevity.
Were there obverse meditations of involution increasingly less vast?
Of the aeons of geological periods recorded in the stratifications of the earth, of the myriad minute entomological organic existences concealed in cavities of the earth, beneath removable stones, in hives and mounds, of microbes, germs, bacteria, bacilli, spermatosa, of the incalculable trillions of billions of millions of imperceptible molecules contained by cohesion of molecular affinity in a single pinhead, of the universe of human serum, constellated with red and white bodies, themselves universes of void space, constellated with other bodies, each in continuity, its universe of divisible component bodies, of which each was again divisible in divisions of redivisible component bodies, dividends and divisors, ever diminishing, without actual division, till, if the progress were carried far enough, naught nowhere was never reached.
Why did he not elaborate these calculations to a more precise result?
Because some years previously, in 1886, when occupied with the problem of the quadrature of the circle, he had learned of the existence of a number computed to a relative degree of accuracy to be of such magnitude and of so many places, e.g. the ninth power of the ninth power of nine, that, the result having been obtained, 33 closely printed volumes of 1,000 pages each of innumerable quires and reams of India paper would have to be requisitioned in order to contain the complete tale of its printed integers of units, tens, hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions, billions, the nucleus of the nebula of every digit of every series, containing succinctly the potentiality of being raised to the utmost kinetic elaboration of any power of any of its powers.
Did he find the problem of the inhabitability of the planets and their satellites by a race given in species, and of the possible social and moral redemption of said race by a redeemer, easier of solution?
Of a different order of difficulty. Conscious that the human organism, normally capable of sustaining an atmospheric pressure of 19 tons, when elevated to a considerable altitude in the terrestrial atmosphere, suffered, with arithmetical progression of intensity, according as the line of demarcation between troposphere and stratosphere was approximated, from nasal hemorrhage, impeded respiration, and vertigo. When proposing this problem for solution, he had conjectured, as a working hypothesis, which could not be proved impossible, that a more adaptable and differently anatomically constructed race of beings might subsist otherwise under Martian, Mercurial, Veneral, Jovian, Saturnian, Neptunian, or Uranian sufficient and equivalent conditions. Though an apogean humanity of beings created in varying forms with finite differences resulting similar to the whole and to one another would probably there as here remain inalterably and inalienably attached to vanities, to vanities of vanities, and all that is vanity.
And the problem of possible redemption?
The minor was proved by the major.
Which various features of the constellations were in turn considered?
The various colours significant of various degrees of vitality. White, yellow, crimson, vermilion, cinnabar. Their degrees of brilliancy. Their magnitudes revealed up to and including the seventh. Their positions. The Wagener star, Walsingham Way, the Chariot of David. The annular cinctures of Saturn, the condensation of spiral nebulae into suns, the interdependent gyrations of double suns, the independent synchronous discoveries of Galileo, Simon Marius, Piazzi, Leverrier, Herschel, Gall, the systematizations attempted by Bode and Kepler of cubes of distances and squares of times of revolution, the almost infinite compressibility of hirsute comets and their vast elliptical egressive and re-entrant orbits from perihelion to aphelion, the sidereal origin of meteoric stones, the Libyan floods on Mars about the period of the birth of the younger astroscopist, the annual recurrence of meteoric showers about the period of the feast of S. Lawrence, Martyr, 10 August, the monthly recurrence known as the new moon with the old moon in her arms, the posited influence of celestial on human bodies, the appearance of a star, first magnitude, of exceeding brilliancy, dominating by night and day, a new luminous sun generated by the collision and amalgamation in incandescence of two non-luminous ex-suns, about the period of the birth of William Shakespeare, over Delta, in the recumbent, never-setting constellation of Cassiopeia, and of a star, second magnitude, of similar origin but lesser brilliancy, which had appeared in and disappeared from the constellation of the Corona Septentrionalis about the period of the birth of Leopold Bloom, and of other stars of presumably similar origin which had effectively, or presumably, appeared in and disappeared from the constellation of Andromeda about the period of the birth of Stephen Dedalus, and in and from the constellation of Auriga some years after the birth and death of Rudolf Bloom, Jr., and in and from other constellations some years before or after the birth or death of other persons. The attendant phenomena of eclipses, solar and lunar, from immersion to emersion, abatement of wind, transit of shadow, taciturnity of winged creatures, emergence of nocturnal or crepuscular animals, persistence of infernal light, obscurity of terrestrial waters, pallor of human beings.
His, Bloom's, logical conclusion having weighed the matter and allowing for possible error?
That it was not a heaven tree, not a heaven grot, not a heaven beast, not a heaven man. That it was a utopia, there being no known method from the known to the unknown. An infinity, renderable equally finite by the supposititious probable apposition of one or more bodies equally of the same and of different magnitudes. A mobility of illusory forms immobilized in space, remobilized in air. A past, which possibly had ceased to exist as a present before its future spectators had entered actual present existence.
Was he more convinced of the aesthetic value of the spectacle?
Indubitably, in consequence of the reiterated examples of poets in the delirium of the frenzy of attachment, or in the abasement of rejection invoking ardent sympathetic constellations, or the frigidity of the satellite of their planet.
Did he then accept as an article of belief the theory of astrological influences upon sublunary disasters?
It seemed to him as possible of proof as of confutation, and the nomenclature employed in its selenographical charts as attributable to verifiable intuition as to fallacious analogy. The lake of dreams, the sea of rains, the gulf of dews, the ocean of fecundity.
What special affinities appeared to him to exist between the moon and woman?
Her antiquity in preceding and surviving successive Tellurian generations, her nocturnal predominance, her satellitic dependence, her luminary reflection, her constancy under all her phases, rising and setting by her appointed times, waxing and waning, the forced invariability of her aspect, her indeterminate response to inaffirmative interrogation, her potency over effluent and refluent waters, her power to enamour, to mortify, to invest with beauty, to render insane, to incite to and aid delinquency, the tranquil inscrutability of her visage, the terribility of her isolated, dominant, implacable, resplendent propinquity, her omens of tempest and of calm, the stimulation of her light, her motion and her presence, the admonition of her craters, her arid seas, her silence, her splendor when visible, her attraction when invisible.
What visible luminous sign attracted Bloom's, who attracted Stephen's gaze?
In the second story rear of his Bloom's house, the light of a paraffin oil lamp with oblique shade projected on a screen of roller blind supplied by Frank O'Hara, window blind, curtain pole and revolving shutter manufacturer, 16 Anger Street.
How did he elucidate the mystery of an invisible person, his wife, Marion, Molly Bloom, denoted by a visible splendid sign, a lamp?
With indirect and direct verbal allusions or affirmations, with subdued affection and admiration, with description, with impediment, with suggestion.
Both, then, were silent?
Silent, each contemplating the other in both mirrors of the reciprocal flesh of their his-not-his fellow faces.
Were they indefinitely inactive?
At Stephen's suggestion, at Bloom's instigation, both, first Stephen, then Bloom, in penumbra, urinated. Their sides contiguous, their organs of micturition reciprocally rendered invisible by manual circumposition, their gazes, first Bloom's, then Stephen's, elevated to the projected luminous and semi-luminous shadow.
Similarly?
The trajectories of their first sequent, then simultaneous urinations were dissimilar. Bloom's longer, less irruent, in the incomplete form of the bifurcated penultimate alphabetical letter, who, in his ultimate year at high school, 1880, had been capable of attaining the point of greatest altitude against the whole concurrent strength of the institution, 210 scholars. Stevens, higher, more sibilant, who, in the ultimate hours of the previous day, had augmented by diuretic consumption an insistent vesical pressure.
What different problems presented themselves to each concerning the invisible, audible collateral organ of the other?
To Bloom, the problems of irritability, tumescence, rigidity, reactivity, dimension, sanitariness, pellosity.
To Stephen, the problem of the sacerdotal integrity of Jesus circumcised, 1st January, holiday of obligation to hear Mass and abstain from unnecessary servile work, and the problem as to whether the divine prepuce, the carnal bridal ring of the Holy Roman Catholic Apostolic Church, conserved in Calcutta, were deserving of simple hyperduly or of the fourth degree of latria accorded to the abscission of such divine excrescences as hair and toenails. What celestial sign was by both simultaneously observed?
A star precipitated with great apparent velocity across the firmament from Vega in the Lyre above the zenith beyond the star group of the Tress of Berenice towards the zodiacal sign of Leo.
How did the centripetal remainder afford egress to the centrifugal departer?
By inserting the barrel of an arugonated male key in the hole of an unstable female lock, obtaining a purchase on the bow of the key, and turning its wards from right to left, withdrawing a bolt from its staple, pulling inward spasmodically an obsolescent unhinged door, and revealing an aperture for free egress and free ingress.
How did they take leave one of the other in separation?
Standing perpendicular at the same door and on different sides of its base, the lines of their valedictory arms meeting at any point and forming any angle less than the sum of two right angles.
What sound accompanied the union of their tangent, the disunion of their respectively centrifugal and centripetal hands?
The sound of the peal of the hour of the night by the chime of the bells in the Church of St. George.
What echoes of that sound were by both and each heard?
By Stephen?
Liliata rutilantium. Turma circum det, jubilantium te virginum, chorus excipiat. By Bloom?
Hey ho, hey ho, hey ho, hey ho.
Where were the several members of the company, which with Bloom that day, at the bidding of that peal, had travelled from Sandymount in the south to Glasnevin in the north?
Martin Cunningham in bed, Jack Power in bed, Simon Dedalus in bed, Tom Kernan in bed, Ned Lambert in bed, Joe Hines in bed, John Henry Menton in bed, Bernard Corrigan in bed, Patsy Dignam in bed, Paddy Dignam in the grave.
Alone, what did Bloom hear?
The double reverberation of retreating feet on the heaven-born earth, the double vibration of a Jew's harp in the resonant lane.
Alone, what did Bloom feel?
The cold of interstellar space, thousands of degrees below freezing point, or the absolute zero of Fahrenheit, centigrade, or Reaumur, the incipient intimations of proximate dawn.
Of what did bell chime and hand touch and footstep and lone chill remind him?
Of companions now in various manners in different places defunct. Percy Apjohn, killed in action, Modder River. Philip Gilligan, phthisis, Jervis Street Hospital. Matthew F. Kane, accidental drowning, Dublin Bay. Philip Moisel, Paimia, Heytesbury Street. Michael Hart, phthisis, Mater Misericordiae Hospital. Patrick Dignam, apoplexy, Sandymount.
What prospect of what phenomena inclined him to remain?
The disparition of three final stars, the diffusion of daybreak, the apparition of a new solar disk.
Had he ever been a spectator of those phenomena?
Once, in 1887, after a protracted performance of charades in the house of Luke Doyle, Kimmage, he had awaited with patience the apparition of the diurnal phenomenon, seated on a wall, his gaze turned in the direction of Mizrach, the east.
He remembered the initial paraphenomena?
More active air, a matutinal distant cock, ecclesiastical clocks at various points, avine music, the isolated tread of an early wayfarer, the visible diffusion of the light of an invisible luminous body, the first golden limb of the resurgent sun perceptible low on the horizon.
Did he remain?
With deep inspiration he returned, retraversing the garden, re-entering the passage, reclosing the door. With brief suspiration he reassumed the candle, reascended the stairs, reapproached the door of the front room, hall floor, and re-entered.
What suddenly arrested his ingress?
The right temporal lobe of the hollow sphere of his cranium came into contact with a solid timber angle, where, an infinitesimal but sensible fraction of a second later, a painful sensation was located, in consequence of the antecedent sensations transmitted and registered.
Describe the alterations effected in the disposition of the articles of furniture.
A sofa, upholstered in prune plush, had been translocated from opposite the door to the ingleside near the compactly furled Union Jack, an alteration which he had frequently intended to execute. The blue and white checker-inlaid majolica-topped table had been placed opposite the door, in the place vacated by the prune plush sofa. The walnut sideboard, a projecting angle of which had momentarily arrested his ingress, had been moved from its position beside the door to a more advantageous but more perilous position in front of the door. Two chairs had been moved from right and left of the ingleside to the position originally occupied by the blue and white checker-inlaid majolica-topped table.
Describe them.
One, a squat, stuffed, easy chair with stout arms extended and back slanted to the rear, which, repelled in recoil, had then upturned an irregular fringe of a rectangular rug, and now displayed on its amply upholstered seat a centralized, diffusing and diminishing discoloration. The other, a slender, splay-foot chair of glossy cane curves, placed directly opposite the former, its frame from top to seat and from seat to base being varnished dark brown, its seat being a bright circle of white plaited rush.
What significance is attached to these two chairs?
Significances of similitude, of posture, of symbolism, of circumstantial evidence, of testimonial supermanence.
What occupied the position originally occupied by the sideboard?
A vertical piano, Cadby, with exposed keyboard, its closed coffin supporting a pair of long, yellow ladies' gloves and an emerald ashtray containing four consumed matches, a partly consumed cigarette, and two discolored ends of cigarettes. Its music rest supporting the music, in the key of G natural, for voice and piano, of Love's Old Sweet Song, words by G. Clifton Bingham, composed by J. L. Malloy, sung by Madame Antoinette Sterling. Open at the last page with the final indications, ad libitum, forte, pedal, animato, sustained, pedal, ritirando. Close.
With what sensations did Bloom contemplate in rotation these objects?
With strain, elevating a candlestick. With pain, feeling on his right temple a contused tumescence. With attention, focusing his gaze on a large, dull, passive, and slender, bright active. With solicitation, bending and downturning the upturned rug fringe. With amusement, remembering Dr. Malachi Mulligan's scheme of colour containing the gradation of green. With pleasure, repeating the words and antecedent act, and perceiving through various channels of internal sensibility the consequent and concomitant tepid, pleasant diffusion of gradual discoloration.
His next proceeding?
From an open box on the majolica top table he extracted a black, diminutive cone, 1 inch in height, placed it on its circular base on a small tin plate, placed his candlestick on the right corner of the mantelpiece, produced from his waistcoat a folded page of prospectus illustrated, entitled Agendeth Netaim, unfolded the same, examined it superficially, rolled it into a thin cylinder, ignited it in the candle flame, applied it when ignited to the apex of the cone, till the latter reached the stage of rutilance, placed the cylinder in the basin of the candlestick, disposing its unconsumed part in such a manner as to facilitate total combustion.
What followed this operation?
That truncated conical crater, summit of the diminutive volcano, emitted a vertical and serpentine fume, redolent of aromatic oriental incense.
What homothetic objects other than the candlestick stood on the mantelpiece?
A timepiece of striated Connemara marble, stopped at the hour of 4:46 a.m. on the 21st March 1896, matrimonial gift of Matthew Dillon. A dwarf tree of glacial arborescence under a transparent bell shade, matrimonial gift of Luke and Carolyn Doyle. An embalmed owl, matrimonial gift of Alderman John Hooper.
What interchanges of looks took place between these three objects and Bloom?
In the mirror of the gilt-bordered pier-glass, the undecorated back of the dwarf tree regarded the upright back of the embalmed owl. Before the mirror, the matrimonial gift of Alderman John Hooper, with a clear, melancholy, wise, bright, motionless, compassionate gaze, regarded Bloom, while Bloom, with obscure, tranquil, profound, motionless, compassionate gaze, regarded the matrimonial gift of Luke and Carolyn Doyle.
What composite, asymmetrical image in the mirror then attracted his attention?
The image of a solitary, ipsorelative, mutable, aliorelative man.
Why solitary, ipso-relative?
Brothers and sisters had he none, yet this man's father was his grandfather's son.
Why mutable, allier relative?
From infancy to maturity, he had resembled his maternal procreatrix. From maturity to senility, he would increasingly resemble his paternal creator.
What final visual impression was communicated to him by the mirror?
The optical reflection of several inverted volumes improperly arranged and not in the order of their common letters, with scintillating titles on the two bookshelves opposite.
Catalogue these books.
Tom's Dublin Post Office Directory, 1886. Dennis Florence McCarthy's poetical works, Copper Beechleaf, bookmark at P5. Shakespeare's works, Dark Crimson, Morocco, Gold-Tooled. The Useful Ready Reckoner, brown cloth. The Secret History of the Court of Charles II, red cloth, tooled binding. The Child's Guide, blue cloth. When We Were Boys, by William O'Brien, MP, green cloth, slightly faded, envelope, bookmark at P217. Thoughts from Spinoza, maroon leather. The Story of the Heavens, by Sir Robert Ball, blue cloth. Ellis's Three Trips to Madagascar, brown cloth, title obliterated. The Stark Munro Letters, by A. Conan Doyle, property of the City of Dublin Public Library, 106 Capel Street, Lent, 21st May, Whitsun Eve, 1904, due, 4th June, 1904, 13 days overdue, black cloth binding, bearing white, letter number ticket. Voyages in China, by Viator, recovered with brown paper, red ink title. Philosophy of the Talmud, sewn pamphlet. Lockhart's Life of Napoleon, cover wanting, marginal annotations, minimizing victories, aggrandizing defeats of the protagonist. Sol und Haben by Gustav Freytag, black boards, gothic characters, cigarette coupon bookmark at P24. Hosier's History of the Russo-Turkish War, brown cloth, two volumes with gummed label, Garrison Library, Governor's Parade, Gibraltar, on verso of the cover. Lawrence Bloomfield in Ireland by William Allingham, second edition, green cloth, gilt trefoil design, previous owner's name on recto of flyleaf erased. A Handbook of Astronomy, cover, brown leather detached, five plates, antique letterpress, long primer, author's footnotes, nonpareil, marginal clues brevier, captions, small pica. The Hidden Life of Christ, black boards. In the Track of the Sun, yellow cloth, title page missing, recurrent title intestation. Physical Strength and How to Obtain It by Eugene Sandow, red cloth. Short but yet plain elements of geometry, written in French by F. Ignat, Pardies and rendered into English by John Harris, D.D., London, printed for R. Naplock at the Bishop's Head, M.D.C.C.X.I., with dedicatory epistle to his worthy friend Charles Cox, Esquire, Member of Parliament for the Burgh of Southwark, and having ink-calligraphed statement on the flyleaf, certifying that the book was the property of Michael Gallagher, dated this 10th day of May, 1822, and requesting the person who should find it, if the book should be lost or go astray, to restore it to Michael Gallagher, Carpenter, Duffery Gate, Enniscorthy, County Wicklow, the finest place in the world.
What reflections occupied his mind during the process of reversion of the inverted volumes?
The necessity of order, a place for everything and everything in its place. The deficient appreciation of literature possessed by females, the incongruity of an apple incuneated in a tumbler and of an umbrella inclined in a clothestool, the insecurity of hiding any secret document behind, beneath, or between the pages of a book.
Which volume was the largest in bulk?
Hosier's History of the Russo-Turkish War.
What, among other data, did the second volume of the work in question contain?
The name of a decisive battle, forgotten, frequently remembered by a decisive officer, Major Brian Cooper Tweedie, remembered.
Why, firstly and secondly, did he not consult the work in question?
Firstly, in order to exercise mnemotechnic. Secondly, because after an interval of amnesia, when seated at the central table, about to consult the work in question, he remembered by mnemotechnic the name of the military engagement, Plevna.
What caused him consolation in his sitting posture?
The candour, nudity, pose, tranquillity, youth, grace, sex, counsel of a statue erect in the centre of the table, an image of Narcissus, purchased by auction from P.A. Wren, 9 Bachelor's Walk.
What caused him irritation in his sitting posture?
Inhibitory pressure of collar, size 17, and waistcoat, 5 buttons, 2 articles of clothing, superfluous in the costume of mature males, and inelastic to alterations of mass by expansion.
How was the irritation allayed?
He removed his collar, with contained black necktie and collapsible stud, from his neck to a position on the left of the table. He unbuttoned successively in reversed direction waistcoat, trousers, shirt and vest along the medial line of irregular, increspated black hair extending in triangular convergence from the pelvic basin over the circumference of the abdomen and the umbilicular fossicle along the medial line of nodes to the intersection of the sixth pectoral vertebrae, thence produced both ways at right angles and terminating in circles described about two equidistant points, right and left, on the summits of the mammary prominences. He unbraced successively each of 6-1 braced trouser buttons, arranged in pairs, of which one incomplete.
What involuntary actions followed?
He compressed between two fingers the flesh circumjacent to a cicatrice in the left infracostal region below the diaphragm, resulting from a sting inflicted 2 weeks and 3 days previously, 23 May 1904, by a bee. He scratched imprecisely with his right hand, though insensible of prurition, various points and surfaces of his partly exposed, wholly abluted skin. He inserted his left hand into the left lower pocket of his waistcoat and extracted and replaced a silver coin, 1 shilling, placed there, presumably, on the occasion, 17th October 1903, of the interment of Mrs. Emily Sinico, Sydney Parade.
Compile the budget for 16th June 1904.
Debit. 1 poor kidney, 3 pence. 1 copy Freeman's Journal, 1 penny. 1 bath and gratification, 1 shilling and 6 pence. Tram fare, 1 penny. In memoriam Patrick Dignam, 5 shillings. 2 Banbury cakes, 1 penny. 1 lunch, 7 pence. 1 renewal fee for book, 1 shilling. 1 packet notepaper and envelopes, 2 pence. 1 dinner and gratification, 2 shillings. 1 postal order and stamp, 2 shillings and 8 pence. Tram fare, 1 penny. 1 pig's foot, 4 pence. 1 sheep's trotter, 3 pence. 1 cake, fries, plain chocolate, 1 penny. 1 square soda bread, 4 pence. 1 coffee and bun, 4 pence. Loan, Stephen Dedalus, refunded, £1.7. Balance, 17 shillings and 5 pence. Total, £2.19 and 3. Credit, cash in hand, 4 shillings and 9 pence. Commission received, Freeman's Journal, £1.7 and 6 pence. Loan, Stephen Dedalus, £1.7. Total, £2.19 and 3.
Did the process of divestiture continue?
Sensible of a benignant, persistent ache in his footsoles, he extended his foot to one side and observed the creases, protuberances, and salient points caused by foot pressure in the course of walking repeatedly in several different directions. Then, inclined, he disnoded the lace knots, unhooked and loosened the laces, took off each of his 2 boots for the second time, detached the partially moistened right sock, through the forepart of which the nail of his great toe had again effracted, raised his right foot, and having unhooked a purple elastic sock suspender, took off his right sock, placed his unclothed right foot on the margin of the seat of his chair, picked at and gently lacerated the protruding part of the great toenail, raised the part lacerated to his nostrils, and inhaled the odour of the quick, then, with satisfaction, threw away the lacerated unguical fragment.
Why with satisfaction?
Because the odour inhaled corresponded to other odours inhaled of other unguical fragments, picked and lacerated by Master Bloom, pupil of Mrs. Ellis's juvenile school, patiently each night in the act of brief genuflection and nocturnal prayer and ambitious meditation.
In what ultimate ambition had all concurrent and consecutive ambitions now coalesced?
Not to inherit by right of primogeniture, gavelkind, or borough English, or possess in perpetuity an extensive domain of a sufficient number of acres, roods, and perches, statute land measure, valuation £42, of grazing turbary surrounding a baronial hall with gate lodge and carriage drive, nor, on the other hand, a terrace house or semi-detached villa described as Rus in Urbe or Quisi Sana, but to purchase, by private treaty, in fee simple, a thatched, bungalow-shaped, two-story dwelling-house of southerly aspect, surmounted by vane and lightning conductor, connected with the earth, with porch covered by parasitic plants, ivy or Virginia creeper, hall door, olive green, with smart carriage finish and neat door brasses, stucco front with gilt tracery at eaves and gable, rising, if possible, upon a gentle eminence with agreeable prospect from balcony, with stone pillar parapet over unoccupied and unoccupiable interjacent pastures, and standing in 5 or 6 acres of its own ground, at such a distance from the nearest public thoroughfare as to render its house lights visible at night, above and through a quickset hornbeam hedge of topiary cutting, situate at a given point not less than 1 statute mile from the periphery of the metropolis, within a time limit of not more than 5 minutes from tram or train line, e.g. Dundrum South or Sutton North, both localities equally reported by trial to resemble the terrestrial poles in being favourable climates for physical subjects. The premises to be held under fee farm rent, lease 999 years, the messuage to consist of 1 drawing room with bay window, 2 lancets, thermometer affixed, 1 sitting room, 4 bedrooms, 2 servants' rooms, tiled kitchen with close range and scullery, lounge hall fitted with linen wall presses, fumed oak sectional bookcase containing the Encyclopaedia Britannica and New Century Dictionary, transverse obsolete medieval and oriental weapons, dinner gong, alabaster lamp, bowl pendant, vulcanite automatic telephone receiver with adjacent directory, hand-tufted Axminster carpet with cream ground and trellis border, loo table with pillar and claw legs, hearth with massive fire brasses and ormolu mantel chronometer clock, guaranteed timekeeper with cathedral chime, barometer with hygrographic chart, comfortable lounge settees and corner fitments, upholstered in ruby plush with good springing and sunk centre, 3-banner Japanese screen and cuspidors, club style, rich wine-coloured leather, gloss renewable with a minimum of labour by use of linseed oil and vinegar, and pyramidically prismatic central chandelier lustre, bentwood perch with a finger-tame parrot, expurgated language, embossed mural paper at 10 shillings per dozen, with transverse swags of carmine floral design, and top crown frieze. Staircase, 3 continuous flights at successive right angles, of varnished, clear-grained oak, treads and risers, newel, balusters and handrail, with stepped-up panel dado, dressed with camphorated wax. Bathroom, hot and cold supply, reclining and shower. Water closet on mezzanine, provided with opaque, single-pane oblong window. Tip-up seat, bracket lamp, brass tie-rod brace, armrests, footstool, and artistic oleograph on inner face of door. Ditto, plain. Servants' apartments, with separate sanitary and hygienic necessaries for cook, general and between-maid, salary rising by biennial unearned increments of £2, with comprehensive fidelity insurance annual bonus £1, and retiring allowance based on the 65 system after 30 years' service. Pantry, buttery, larder, refrigerator, out offices, coal and wood cellarage, with wine bin, still and sparkling vintages, for distinguished guests if entertained to dinner, evening dress, carbon monoxide gas supply throughout.
What additional attractions might the grounds contain?
As addenda, a tennis and fives court, a shrubbery, a glass summer house with tropical palms, equipped in the best botanical manner, a rockery with water spray, a beehive arranged on humane principles, oval flower beds in rectangular grass plots set with eccentric ellipses of scarlet and chrome tulips, blue scillas, crocuses, polyanthers, sweet William, sweet pea, lily of the valley. Bulbs obtainable from Sir James W. Mackey Limited, wholesale and retail, seed and bulb merchant and nurseryman, agent for chemical manures, 23 Sackville Street Upper. An orchard, kitchen garden and vinery, protected against illegal trespassers by glass-topped mural enclosures, a lumber shed with padlock for various inventoried implements.
As?
Eel traps, lobster pots, fishing rods, hatchet, steel yard, grindstone, clod crusher, swathe turner, carriage sack, telescope ladder, 10-tooth rake, washing clogs, hay tedder, tumbling rake, billhook, paint pot, brush, hoe, and so on.
What improvements might be subsequently introduced?
A rabbitry and fowl run, a dovecote, a botanical conservatory, 2 hammocks, ladies and gentlemen's, a sundial shaded and sheltered by laburnum or lilac trees, an exotically harmonically accorded Japanese tinkle gate bell affixed to left lateral gatepost, a capacious water butt, a lawnmower with side delivery and grass box, a lawn sprinkler with hydraulic hose.
What facilities of transit were desirable?
When city-bound, frequent connection by train or tram from their respective intermediate station or terminal. When country-bound, velocipedes, a chainless freewheel roadster cycle with side basket car attached, or draft conveyance, a donkey with wicker trap, or smart phaeton with good working solidangular cob, Rowan Gelding 14H.
what might be the name of this eligible or erected residence?
Bloom Cottage, St. Leopold's, Flowerville.
Could Bloom of 7 Eccles Street foresee Bloom of Flowerville?
In loose, all-wool garments with Harris tweed cap, price 8 and 6, and useful garden boots with elastic gussets and watering can, planting aligned young fir trees, syringing, pruning, staking, sowing hayseed, trundling a weed-laden wheelbarrow without excessive fatigue at sunset, amid the scent of new-mown hay, ameliorating the soil, multiplying wisdom, achieving longevity.
What syllabus of intellectual pursuits was simultaneously possible?
Snapshot photography, comparative study of religions, folklore relative to various amatory and superstitious practices, contemplation of the celestial constellations.
What lighter recreations?
Outdoor, garden and field work, cycling on level macadamized causeways, ascents of moderately high hills, natation in secluded fresh water and unmolested river boating in secure wherry or light curricle with kedge anchor on reaches free from weirs and rapids, period of estivation. Vespertinal perambulation or equestrian circumprocession with inspection of sterile landscape and contrastingly agreeable cottagers' fires of smoking peat turves, period of hibernation. Indoor. Discussion in tepid security of unsolved historical and criminal problems. Lecture of unexpurgated exotic erotic masterpieces. House carpentry with toolbox containing hammer, awl, nail, screws, tin tacks, gimlet, tweezers, bullnose plane and turnscrew.
Might he become a gentleman farmer of field produce and livestock?
Not impossibly, with one or two stripper cows, one pike of upland hay, and requisite farming implements, e.g. an end-to-end churn, a turnip pulper, etc.
What would be his civic functions and social status among the county families and landed gentry?
Arranged successively in ascending powers of hierarchical order, that of gardener, groundsman, cultivator, breeder, and at the zenith of his career, resident magistrate or justice of the peace with a family crest and coat of arms and appropriate classical motto, Semper Paratus, duly recorded in the court directory, Bloom, Leopold P., MP, PC, KP, LLD, honoris causa, Bloomville, Dundrum. And mentioned in court and fashionable intelligence, Mr. and Mrs. Leopold Bloom have left Kingstown for England.
What course of action did he outline for himself in such capacity?
A course that lay between undue clemency and excessive rigour. The dispensation in a heterogeneous society of arbitrary classes, incessantly rearranged in terms of greater and lesser social inequality, of unbiased, homogeneous, indisputable justice, tempered with mitigants of the widest possible latitude, but exactable to the uttermost farthing with confiscation of estate, real and personal, to the crown. Loyal to the highest constituted power in the land, actuated by an innate love of rectitude, his aims would be the strict maintenance of public order, the repression of many abuses, though not of all simultaneously, every measure of reform or retrenchment being a preliminary solution to be contained by fluxion in the final solution. The upholding of the letter of the law, common statute and law merchant, against all traversers in coven and trespassers acting in contravention of bylaws and regulations, all resuscitators by trespass and petty larceny of kindlings of Venville rights, obsolete by desuetude, all orotund instigators of international persecution, all perpetrators of international animosities, all menial molesters of domestic conviviality, all recalcitrant violators of domestic connubiality.
Prove that he had loved rectitude from his earliest youth.
To Master Percy Apjohn at high school in 1880, he had divulged his disbelief in the tenets of the Irish Protestant Church, to which his father Rudolf Virag, later Rudolf Bloom, had been converted from the Israelitic faith and communion in 1865 by the Society for Promoting Christianity Among the Jews, subsequently abjured by him in favour of Roman Catholicism at the epoch of and with a view to his matrimony in 1888. To Daniel McGrane and Francis Wade in 1882, during a juvenile friendship, terminated by the premature emigration of the former, he had advocated, during nocturnal perambulations, the political theory of colonial, e.g. Canadian, expansion, and the evolutionary theories of Charles Darwin, expounded in The Descent of Man and The Origin of Species. In 1885, he had publicly expressed his adherence to the collective and national economic program advocated by James Fintan Lawler, John Fisher Murray, John Mitchell, J.F.X. O'Brien, and others. The agrarian policy of Michael Davitt, the constitutional agitation of Charles Stewart Parnell, M.P. for Cork City, the program of peace, retrenchment, and reform of William Ewart Gladstone, M.P. for Midlothian, N.B., and, in support of his political convictions, had climbed up into the secure position amid the ramifications of a tree on Northumberland Road to see the entrance, 2nd February 1888, into the capital of a demonstrative torchlight procession of 20,000 divided into 120 trade corporations bearing 2,000 torches in escort of the Marquess of Ripon and John Morley.
How much and how did he propose to pay for this country residence?
As per prospectus of the Industrious, Foreign, Acclimatised, Nationalised, Friendly, State-Aided Building Society, Incorporated 1874, a maximum of £60 per annum, being one-sixth of an assured income derived from gilt-edged securities representing at 5% simple interest on capital of £1,200, estimate of price at 20 years' purchase, of which one-third to be paid on acquisition and the balance in the form of annual rent, viz. £800 plus 2.5% interest on the same, repayable quarterly in equal annual instalments until extinction by amortization of loan advanced for purchase within a period of 20 years, amounting to an annual rental of £64, head rent included, the title deeds to remain in possession of the lender or lenders with a saving clause envisaging forced sale, foreclosure, and mutual compensation in the event of protracted failure to pay the terms assigned. Otherwise, the messuage to become the absolute property of the tenant-occupier upon expiry of the period of years stipulated.
What rapid but insecure means to opulence might facilitate immediate purchase?
A private wireless telegraph, which would transmit by dot and dash system the result of a national equine handicap, flat or steeplechase, of one or more miles and furlongs, won by an outsider at odds of 50-1 at 3:08 p.m. at Ascot, Greenwich time, the message being received and available for betting purposes in Dublin at 2:59 p.m. Dunsink time. The unexpected discovery of an object of great monetary value, precious stone, valuable adhesive or impressed postage stamps, 7 shilling mauve imperforate Hamburg 1866, 4 pence rose blue paper perforate Great Britain 1855, 1 franc stone official rouletted diagonal surcharge Luxembourg 1878, antique dynastical ring, unique relic in unusual repositories or by unusual means, from the air dropped by an eagle in flight, by fire amid the carbonized remains of an incendiated edifice, in the sea, amid flotsam, jetsam, laggan, and derelict, on earth, in the gizzard of a comestible fowl. A Spanish prisoner's donation of a distant treasure of valuables or specie or bullion lodged with a solvent banking corporation 100 years previously at 5% compound interest of the collective worth of £5 million STG, £5 million sterling. A contract with an inconsiderate contractee for the delivery of 32 consignments of some given commodity in consideration of cash payment on delivery at the initial rate of 1 farthing to be increased constantly in the geometrical progression of 2. A farthing, a halfpenny, a penny, 2 pence, 4 pence, 8 pence, 1 and 4 pence, 2 and 8 pence to 32 terms. A prepared scheme based on a study of the laws of probability to break the bank at Monte Carlo. A solution of the secular problem of the quadrature of the circle, government premium £1 million sterling.
Was vast wealth acquirable through industrial channels?
The reclamation of dunams of waste arenary soil, proposed in the prospectus of Agendath Netheim, Bleibtreustrasse, Berlin, W15, by the cultivation of orange plantations and melon fields and reforestation. The utilization of waste paper, fells of sewer rodents, human excrement, possessing chemical properties, in view of the vast production of the first, vast number of the second, and immense quantity of the third, every normal human being of average vitality and appetite producing annually, cancelling by-products of water, a sum total of £80, mixed animal and vegetable diet, to be multiplied by 4,386,035, the total population of Ireland according to the census returns of 1901.